Ladies and gentlemen, this is the fallen angel Christopher Daniels, world-renowned from town to town, and you are listening to the Gerwick Report with Steve Gerwick and Frank D.
Of the Gerwick Report podcast for Friday, October the 24th, 2014. I am Steve Gerwick of www.gerwick.net, Gerwick.net, your source for all your pro wrestling news on the World Wide Web since 1997. And I'm joined alongside by my longtime tag team partner, Frank D. What's up?
What's going on, Steve? What's going on, everybody out there listening right now? I can tell you things right now are moving and popping on all cylinders here at Gerwick.net, especially with the podcast. You know, Steve, last week we were added officially to TV Tracks on YouTube, and we got a couple of clips up there right now. And some of the clips are very controversial, and it's got a lot of feedback, and we're going to address some of that today here on the show. But I want to let everybody out there know you can also subscribe to our official YouTube channel at Gerwick Report Podcast YouTube.com. And you can also join our Facebook group as well. Facebook group has about 1,500 members and it's growing. So everything is still for sake right now.
And I also want to mention we have an official page for the podcast as well. Currently on the front page, we have a little pink icon for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You can click on it. It has all our links there where you can listen to us on Stitcher, iTunes, etc. And then you click on where it says episodes, and all 56 previous episodes are up there archived. One click. And you can listen to any of our previous podcasts along with Teddy Long, Ron Simmons, the Vince Russo interview you just mentioned, Frankie Kazarian, etc. So I definitely encourage you to do that. And as Frank said, follow along with us on the Facebook discussion group. Every day, a lot of great discussion going on in the world of professional wrestling, not just limited to our podcast. So I definitely encourage people to check that out. But as you were mentioning there, Frank, we're on the TV Tracks, and clips of our Vince Russo interview are up there now for people to listen to, and the comment board is going crazy with some of the outtakes of that interview. You know, love him or hate him, Frank, as we said before on this podcast, he's probably the most polarizing character in professional wrestling today. There are Vince Russo marks that will defend everything that he says, and everything that he wrote was gold, and then you have others out there who won't believe a word he says. And I guess after talking to him, Frank, we've kind of changed our tune a little bit. And, you know, that interview that we did, I mean, it was over 2 hours long to sift through it all and to analyze and break down everything he said. There's certainly things that I think he was right on the money with in terms of the filtering with WWF and Vince McMahon. But then again, there's the flip side of that, which got a lot of attention, was his comments on ECW and him saying maybe he saw three shows. And as I said before, if something's an influence, it's something you've watched repeatedly and you dig and it becomes part of what you do or you write or you create music for. But I think that was probably the most controversial thing that he said, Frank, is that ECW was not an influence on him writing Monday Night Raw.
Well, you know something, Steve, looking back on that interview, and I have been looking at the comments on YouTube, and like I said, it's very, very, very heated topical discussion. I mean, this guy here, Vince Russo, whether you like him or you don't like him, he is a heat magnet in the wrestling business. People just, they hear the name, either they want to say yay or they want to just like boo. You know, they just hate this guy. But I respect Vince. I respect Vince for coming on the podcast and pretty much letting us ask him anything we wanted to ask him. So I really, you know, respect him for that, and much props to Vince Russo. But I will say this. You know, he made the comment that the WWE's, you know, TV style at the time was influenced by what was going on at WCW. I have to go back right now and disagree with that, because I look at the WCW's programming at the time, and it consisted of the NWO angle and the Cruiserweights, okay? I didn't see anything outrageous happening on that show. That was pretty much, you know, I didn't see anything happening as far as lots of vulgarity. I didn't see anything happening as far as, like, the edgy Jerry Springer-style TV that the WWE would come to, known as Attitude. It wasn't happening at WCW. It was happening, however, at ECW. And whether you want to give ECW credit or not, okay, he said, well, why wouldn't I give, you know, ECW any credit? But I gave WCW credit. Well, it's simple, because you worked for WCW. So that's why you would give WCW credit and not ECW. There's a lot of people to this day that won't give ECW its accolade. And it's kind of funny, you see, because after we did that interview with Russo, WWE Network produces the Monday Night War, and it is ECW's influence on the Monday Night War. It's ECW's influence on WWE.
And not to mention, in our discussion group as well, we heard from Glenn Gilberti, a.k.a. Right. The Disco Inferno, and he's obviously tight with Vince Russo, or they're good friends, and he defended what Vince Russo said, and he's like, what influence did they have? And I think your rebuttal to him was spot on.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, because it's like, I mean, I some aspects of the WWE's writing as far as what he said was influenced by WCW, okay, I can see that with certain groups like the Nation of Domination. I mean, the Nation of Domination was, you know, coming from, they were coming through the crowd, and I can see that as being, you know, directly influenced by the NWO. I can see the D-Generation X, you know, group being influenced by NWO. But to say that you only saw three shows, and to say that you didn't know that ECW had a crucifixion angle, when clearly that's the whole reason why Kurt Angle didn't want to go to WWE at the time, I just think that's complete bullshit. And that's just, I'm going to call it just like that.
I totally agree with you. And but like, again, he's a heat magnet, and it's got people talking. And we put it out there, you know, on this podcast. He said that he would do part two. He said on social media he'd do part two. And, you know, frankly, Frank, I've got many more questions for him. And the invitation is there. If he wants to do part two, and he can come on and plug his website and plug his podcast and plug his fantasy football. I mean, he put out a challenge to us to join fantasy football. And honestly, I don't follow the NFL close enough. I know Frank doesn't even watch the NFL. So, you know, it's not a good challenge for us to, you know, to reply to. You know, I don't have time for fantasy football, Vince. But if you want to come back here, face the music, answer some tough questions, and definitely get the internet buzzing, then the invitation stands and you can come back. And if you don't, then I guess that says a lot for Vince Russo as well.
Doesn't say a lot. Be honest and fair about it, though. It doesn't say a lot about anything, because, the bottom line is that at the time, the guy was, you know, launching his website, and you know, he, you know, wanted to put that out there. He did not only our podcast, but he did, you know, Jim Ross's podcast and whatever else. So I understand it from a business standpoint of, okay, his site's off the ground now. He's doing his own thing. I get that. But at the same token, you promised the listeners of Gerwig.net and our podcast that you'd come up for a second round with us. And if he wants to do it, fine. If he doesn't want to do it, I'm being honest with you, Steve, I'm not losing any sleep over it.
Well, my thing is, if I say to a talent, anybody that we interview on this podcast, if at the end of the podcast I'd say, you know, we'd love to have you back sometime, we'd love to do part two, and they respond positively, and then I may reach out to you, then I would expect you to come back. I mean, you're a person of your word. If I do an interview, Frank, and they say, you know, come back to our show, come back to our podcast, I'm a man of my word. I do it. And if he didn't want to do it, then he shouldn't have, you know, replied to that. But he did it. So it's out there, and if Vince is listening, or I'm sure somebody like the Jackal or somebody on our social media might send this clip to him, you know, the offer still stands. We've reached out to you, social media, text messages. And like you said, Frank, we're not going to kiss the guy's ass. But at the same time, if he comes back, we know what that means. It's going to be a lot of traffic. A lot of people will listen. And a lot of controversial topics will come up. So I'm looking forward to doing part two. My opinion of him is I kind of throw it out the window. I just want to – there's things that I think he still needs to address. I mean, we covered a lot of issues. I mean, we talked about Vince filtering his material. We talked about ECW. We talked about Owen Hart. We talked about some aspects of what was going on with WCW and Hulk Hogan, et cetera. But, Frank, I think there's a lot of issues still on the table that we can discuss with him. So, as I've said, the invitation still stands.
Well, you know, and here's the thing about it, too. I respect Vince Russo. I like Vince Russo. I do. I like the conversation we had offline with him, in which he reiterated once again that, you know, we'll come up and do a round two. And like we, you know, like you just said there, see, we covered the first part of Russo's career, which was consisted of him being, you know, Vic Venom in the WWE, writing for the magazine, up until becoming lead writer for Raw, and the introduction of SmackDown, him going to WCW, the whole Oklahoma deal with Ed Ferraro. You know, we covered all of that. Now it's time to get into TNA, the dead brand. It's time to get into talking about everything that happened there. And that's what we wanted to talk about. But like I said, man, you know what? Russo's busy. I get that. And whenever Russo wants to come back on the line, you know, he said he'd do it. Hey, we're more than willing to you know, work around his schedule and make it happen. And I'm pretty sure it'll be controversial because there's Eric Bischoff, another guy I'm a big fan of. Controversy creates cash. And Vince Russo is good for business.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned TNA there. And that's another rant I want to go on a little bit on this podcast. I know we've really shot on TNA over the last, I don't know how many podcasts. And to me, Frank, it's dance or die time for TNA. The TV situation is very much up in the air. We're coming off Bound for Glory, which I think virtually nobody saw. We had a pay-per-view that was taped with no world championship match. In fact, the world championship, and I'm about to put the spoiler out there right now, the TNA Heavyweight Championship changed hands back in the September tapings, has not officially aired, but there was no championship match on Bound for Glory. Bobby Lashley nor the guy who actually won the championship, Bobby Roode, were not booked on that show. There's, you know, we've heard how many days ago now, Frank, that in 10 days we'll have an announcement about the TV situation. Well, the 10 days, I think, are pretty close to being up. You know, they're going to have to deliver here pretty quickly, or they're going to be dark. And to me, Frank, if they go dark, I don't think they get a television deal. I think if they're going to get this television deal done, it has to be right now. And, you know, we've heard all those rumors about WGN and Velocity, et cetera. As time goes further down the line, in fact, I remember we were talking about the Spike TV situation, and I said, every week that goes by, every day goes by, it makes me think it's not going to happen. And now that every day transpires without an announcement about a TV situation leads me to believe that TNA is in a lot of trouble.
Well, you know something, TNA has been in a lot of trouble for years, but it's never gotten this bad to the point where there's nothing going on. There's no news coming out of TNA. I mean, the only thing they have going on right now is this damn British boot camp bullshit nobody cares about. That's all they have going on. And then on top of that, you know, you have pretty much nobody on the roster, really, to talk about. I mean, a lot of your guys have gone over to Ring of Honor, and the other guys who aren't working for Ring of Honor are, you know, pretty much sitting at home or you know, on the indies somewhere. I don't know what's going on with TNA. I really don't get it. You know, they said, you know, 10 days ago they were going to have a TV deal. Vince Carter promised it, and there's nothing. Nothing of it. And, you know, it could be Velocity. It could be WGN America. It could be anybody. But they're not seeing much of nothing. So I believe the company is dead in the water, and I think we all need to just accept that. I think that a lot of the problems there, like Vince Russo stated in the interview, is lack of leadership. And I think that Dixie Carter is the worst leader that there's ever been in a wrestling promotion, period. Okay? And I know people come up here and they rip on Eric Bischoff for his running of WCW into the ground. But here's the difference between Russo and, Bischoff and Dixie Carter. Bischoff actually knew what the hell he was doing. You know, Bischoff actually worked in the business. He was part of AWA, and then he got into WCW. Dixie Carter came from, I don't know where the hell she came from. and all of a sudden her daddy got a wrestling company and took it from there. And TNA had its good days in the early days, the Wednesday night pay-per-views, and the old Fox Sports, you know, net impact back in the day, but that ship has sailed. That show is done. And the thing that, you know, you and I were talking about offline is, why is Spike TV so determined after all these years? After all the years of TNA that they have been on their network, they just throw their hands up. We don't want anything to do with TNA. You guys can be on to the end of the year, and that's it. We're not going to renew you. We don't want nothing to do with the brand. I think that's very telling, because I would like to know, what's the real story there? What caused the rift with TNA and Spike TV? I mean, we've heard the rumors, Steve, that, oh, well, it's because Vince Russo or whatever. I kind of think it might go a little bit further than that, personally.
I'm not the biggest Eric Bischoff fan. I mean, we debated him about the Hall of Fame, but I will give the guy his due. As much as I can criticize some of the bad moves that he made in WCW, I've got to say, I mean, he was instrumental in getting the NWO on WCW. He was instrumental in getting Nitro on TNT and launching the Monday Night Wars. He had success. He was very successful at times. What success has Dixie Carter had over the many years she's been running? I mean, really, she's been running TNA almost from the birth of the company. A couple months in, the Jarretts are in trouble, and they sell the company. I mean, the Carters have owned it almost literally from day one. And what successes, other than getting on Spike, does Dixie Carter, and I don't know how instrumental she was. I know you have to give her credit because she was the president of the company. I mean, as you look over the years, Frank, you know, we've talked about a lot of the negative Dixie Carter. What are the positive Dixie Carter as an administrator, as a leader? It's always, remember, Frank, when we hear people talk about Dixie Carter, it's, she's a nice person, but. And really, I think the Vince Russo interview, when I asked him, did you see Dixie Carter grow in the business? And he said, that's the real problem. I never saw her grow in the business. And as much as you can beat up Vince Russo, you got to give him some credit, at least some credit, for the Monday Night Wars, turning around WWE, the Attitude Era, etc. I can't really cite a lot of examples where Dixie Carter's been a positive influence or did anything really positively for TNA.
Well, you know, here's the thing about that, too. Vince Russo is a guy that I will, like I said, I'm a Russo fan. I will admit that the business was hotter and everything was better when you had a guy like Vince Russo out there doing cutting-edge stuff. I don't know what the hell happened when the guy went to TNA, though. He completely fell off there, and that's my view of that. You know, as a critic of the situation, he fell off there. As far as Dixie Carter goes, the bottom line, end of the day, she's the boss, okay? And we've heard the rumors that maybe Spike TV didn't like Russo, whatever the situation may be. At the end of the day, she's the boss. If it was best for her company to have Russo there, then she called that. If it was, you know, a bad move to have Russo there, she called it. The bottom line is, the woman doesn't have the history or the knowledge or anything about the wrestling business. She's just somebody who I honestly believe she was starstruck by Sting and by Hogan and by Ric Flair and by all these, oh, I'm sorry, Dick Flair and by all these guys that come into the company, and she just didn't know diddly squat about how to run a wrestling company. It's kind of like all those years ago, you heard the stories, the horror stories about WCW and about mismanagement and about the Turner people not knowing anything about the wrestling business, trying to produce a wrestling TV show. Same thing here. I could talk all day about Vince McMahon, and I could say, well, Vince McMahon is an evil genius, but like you said there, Steve, there's a but with, oh, she's a nice lady, but she sucks at running a wrestling company. She's a nice lady, but she sucks as a leader. She's a nice lady, but her product and her company sucks because she puts it in the wrong hands of the wrong people. And that's the problem with TNA and why they are where they are right now. It's just bad management. It's just like, you know, like you said, they've owned the company since pretty much day one. After those after those Huntsville, Alabama tapings, when they did the first couple shows, I think that's when the Carter family took over. They might have taken over in the late 2002. But she's had the company, and she was making some of the financial decisions until that power was taken away from her. And she just made mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake. And I look at Spike TV, and I see Spike TV bent over backwards. They put Impact pretty much on every night you can think of to try to get this brand hot, and it never worked. And it's a dead brand. That's why I've been calling it a dead brand for months. It's a dead brand. We are literally looking at the end of TNA. Unless they pull a TV deal, Steve, out of their ass, it's a done deal.
Again, I'll say this. I mean, even if they do, as I said before, they're going to make less money from the television deal. They have no negotiation power, even with that representative company that's working for them. And you see where that's gotten them, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's excited about them signing with that talent group.
Yeah.
Well, they're not getting a television deal for them. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. So, you know, they gave Dixie Carter credit for that, and people were excited about signing that agreement. Well, that hasn't paid dividends for them. And, you know, when I think about Dixie Carter, people can point to, you know, they brought in Hogan, they brought in Angle, they brought in Sting, Bischoff, etc. All those guys were subsidized by Spike TV.
Yep.
I mean, Spike TV has kept TNA afloat for how long now? They paid for production. They paid for talent. They've took you on the road. They helped pay your international tours, etc. And at the end of the day, what happens with TNA? They fire Eric Bischoff, who has a positive relationship with Spike TV. Then they get Eric – I mean, after Eric is gone, they bring back Vince Russo secretly. And – you know, Frank, if you tried to run things as poorly, I don't know if you could pull it off. I mean, it's just blunder after blunder. I mean, this year's Bound for Glory meant zero. I mean, I'm not to say it would have meant a whole lot if they would have ran it in the United States this year, because, as you said, they're a dead brand. But it would have meant a lot more if they would have had U.S. fans tending their biggest show of the year. It was a tape pay-per-view, and nobody cared. You didn't have a World Heavyweight Champion on the show. You brought in about, what, 10 to 15 TNA stars on that pay-per-view. You had a lot of international talent that, from an American perspective, nobody cares about. It's just blunder after blunder. And Frank, if they close tomorrow, you can blame Dixie Carter. But, I mean, you can blame Bob Carter. He could have sold the company at one point. He took the purse strings away from Dixie Carter and gave it to Janice Carter, his wife. If you're going to do that and strip her financial abilities away from her, why don't just fire her, move on, and try to save the company? I mean, it's just, I don't know, maybe the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And it's sad because, you know, we're talking about a lot of guys losing their jobs. We've got Josh Matthews possibly coming in. I don't know what that means because, I mean, they may not be a company a couple months here, Frank. So it's just blunder after blunder. And when the tombstone is written, which I think is fairly soon, it's got Dixie Carter's name on the top.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one, because here's the deal. This is going to be a very controversial statement I'm going to say here. I don't blame Vince Russo for the demise of TNA when it happens. It's not his fault. This all goes back to what I was saying earlier about leadership. So it goes back to the Carter family. It's their fault. When they had an opportunity to sell that company to Toby Keith and Jeff Jarrett months ago, they didn't want to do it, because they wanted Dixie to have a place on TV. Like, Dixie is Stephanie McMahon, Steve. She's not. Stephanie McMahon is a shrewd businesswoman who has grown up in the wrestling business. She's grown up in the business of sports entertainment. That's the difference between the two. So when you have somebody like Dixie, who has pretty much had this company, and you look at the people they've gone through. I mean, Rob Van Dam. They've gone through Dick Flair. They've gone through Shane Douglas. They've gone through, you know, Sting, Hogan, Bischoff. I mean, Chris Harris, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, the franchise player, AJ Styles, all gone. And you're on your last leg. You know what? You're not even on your last leg, man. You're on your big toe at this point. You know what I mean? It's just a done deal. It's a done deal. And that's just, I've heard this mentioned before on another podcast, Solid Monster Sounds Off, where he talks about when they finally write that book one day, the death of TNA, it'll have Hulk Hogan on the front page with Dixie Carter hugging around his leg, begging him to stay. That'll be the perfect cover for the TNA book. And I have to agree with that. And I believe that we need to go ahead and get Alvarez and everybody to start writing that book, Steve, because it's about to happen.
I would not be surprised if they've already got a couple chapters written to that story.
Right, and I'll buy it too.
Because the final chapters are being probably formulated right now. Because, as I said, I don't see a TV deal getting done.
Yep.
At this point. I mean, they've said now for 10 days. They've said pretty much since they lost the Spike situation, yeah, they'll get another network. Things will work out. We'll stay afloat. And you're seeing the TNA talent now being allowed to work independently outside mm-hmm. the organization. I mean, to me, the writing's on the wall. I mean, dead brand, yes, it's been dead brand for a long time, but they may be officially dead here very soon. And it is really sad. I mean, you know, I did the interview with Christopher Daniels, which you can check out at Gerwick.net. And on our partners, Stitcher, Spreaker, etc. And I asked him point blank, do you think you and Frankie's exit from TNA was related to budgetary decisions? And he said, yes, I guess. But then after we leave, what's the next tag team program? The highest profile tag team program they work on after we leave is bringing back Devon for the Dudleys versus the Hardy Boys, and they brought back Matt Hardy. So, you know, they're paying Devon something to come back. They're paying Matt Hardy something to come back. And we've said it before, Frank, when somebody gets released, like Saban, like AJ, like Shelley, et cetera, and then you're bringing in, I mean, the last tapings, they brought in Gene Snitsky. They brought in Zeke. They brought in now Brodus Clay. So, you know, at the end of the day, when you're cutting the core talent from your roster and bringing in other talents, I mean, what is the point? Do you really think going short-term with, and I will say, you know, the matches with Hardys versus Dullies were great, but in the long scheme of things, the long run, I'd rather have Frankie Kazarian. I'd rather have Christopher Daniels. I'd rather have Saban. I'd rather have AJ Styles. I mean, it's just another disaster decision by TNA.
Well, you know something? You have to look at that decision of who made that decision. I mean, was it a John Gaborik move to get rid of the TNA originals in favor of people that he's previously worked with at WWE, like a Devon, like a Matt Hardy, to bring these guys back in? I don't know. I don't know the situation behind that, but I do see Daniel's point of, was it for budget reasons? Because after we got released, here comes, you know, Devon, here comes Matt. And these guys aren't working for chump change. They have to be paying them something to come in there to do this series of matches. You know, they did their Full Metal Mayhem and all that stuff that they did. So they're paying them something. So I can see the point there, but I mean, who knows, man, at this point with TNA, their financial situation, nobody knows. They're a private company. It's not like WWE. You know, they're private. We will never know how much money they've lost. I mean, you know, the rumor had it, you know, they were like, what, 40-something million or something like that in red, you know, a year or two ago. They've just been losing money, you know, here and there. And Bound for Glory this year was supposed to be, you know, is Bound for Glory is at WrestleMania, and they couldn't draw nothing here in the United States, so they shipped it over to Japan. The storylines over there, I mean, it's just the whole thing this year was just a cluster. And I think we have seen the last of Bound for Glory. I think we have seen the last of TNA. And it's really sad, too, like you said, because these are talents that majority of them will never be in the WWE. The way that machine is working over there right now with their own developmental system, NXT, a lot of these guys aren't going to be in WWE. It's a darn deal. I mean, they just, you know, they release Josh Matthews from WWE. He goes over to TNA. And who's to say how long he's going to be there? You know, it's just a bad thing. I think that we all need to be looking to, you know, January and looking at Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling and see where that's going. Because New Japan Pro Wrestling right now is hot. I think Global Force Wrestling might end up doing something, you know. So we just have to wait and see what happens with that. But TNA is a dead brand. It's a done deal. It's a dead issue. I hope that they get a TV deal, but I'm not, you know, I'm not betting the farm on that one.
Yeah, I think Atlee Green at the Body Slam podcast has said it's probably better just put it out of its misery. It's not going to survive. They're too far in the red. Bob Carter doesn't have the foresight to get rid of his daughter so that he could sell the company. Dixie makes asinine decisions after asinine decision. The tombstone is being drawn up right now. And, you know, it really bodes to just how boring the industry is right now. I mean, I've covered wrestling for years now, decade and a half. And I've never seen a cycle. I mean, there was some down times in 2001 after Vince bought WCW, ECW, 2004, 2005. You know, we were doing the podcast. I mean, there were certainly exciting periods with the X Division, but there was a lot of not so exciting times as well. WWE is, you know, they've taken control of the industry. TNA never was any competition to them. And there's been pretty much no news on the TNA front for how long now, other than just idle speculation about them possibly landing another television deal. And, I mean, we got a pay-per-view this weekend with Hell in a Cell. And I feel zero interest in this paper. I've felt zero interest for WWE pay-per-views now for how long? We've talked about it here on this podcast. I'm not feeling Hell in a Cell. I didn't feel the September pay-per-view, whatever it was called. I wasn't really feeling SummerSlam. I can't really remember, Frank, a period in wrestling where even the wrestling news is generic and boring. I mean, to me, I'm sitting here today doing this podcast with you, and virtually nothing's going on. And I'm getting up in the morning, and, you know, I make some contacts, I make some phone calls, check my emails, and it's like nothing's going on. I mean, honestly, I really don't remember a period that has been so boring right now in wrestling. I mean, even with Hell in a Cell this weekend, Frank, there's nothing going on.
Yeah, I agree with you. The wrestling business sucks ass right now. You know, there's, like you said, there's nothing going on, man. There's no news anywhere. There's no news coming out of the whip. There's nothing going on over there. It's just the same old boring, generic crap that we get every single week. And it's like, I feel like I'm back in the year 2000 now, man, with like every single week when Raw starts, it's Triple H coming out doing a 20-minute promo. And it's like, damn, man, really? It's like, I respect Triple H and his accolades and his accomplishments that he's had in the wrestling business, but I'm gonna shoot with this one. The only reason why he's got that position he's in right now is because he had the foresight to marry the boss's daughter to get that power, to get that corporate position that he wanted. Okay, and the reason why I bring this up is because you know China, right, Joni Lauer?
Yep.
She did a YouTube video talking about WWE's domestic violence policy and completely buried Sean Waltman. Just completely buried him. He's talking about how Waltman abused her and you know, he was doing a bunch of drugs and, you know, she tried to kill herself and all this other stuff. And she really slammed Stephanie McMahon. I guess she never got over the fact of what happened between her and Stephanie and Triple H. And, you know, I look back at that and I'm like, you know, the reason why we're in this position now is because Vince bought his competition, and then the company didn't grow. But then also now you have the Stephanie McMahon in charge of the writing team, and I think she's still in charge of the writing team. And it's just the writing is just piss poor. It's horrible.
Yep.
And that's just the bottom line. It's crap. I don't care about the fact that you are a PG show. You can do edgy content in a PG restrained environment. They used to do it back in the day. If you look back in the day, and we've talked about this on a previous podcast, if you look back in the day of the WWE TV show, a lot of those shows were PG. They were not TV-14. So you can do edgy content in a PG environment. I think the problem today, though, is everybody is so damn sensitive about everything. You know, I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin, you probably couldn't get away with that today. You couldn't get away with, you know, Undertaker putting people on symbols and all that stuff, or some of the satanic storylines that they would do with Taker and Kane. You probably can't do that nowadays, you know, because people would cringe because, you know, everybody is so pussified lately. I don't get it, man. I really don't understand it. You know, TNA could have been that. TNA could have been the organization that could have went above that. And I believe TNA is TV-14. So why their show sucks, I don't understand it. I don't get it. I mean, the TV-14 is what their rating is, and they had Vince Russo there, and Vince Russo is the proprietor of the Attitude Era, the guy who wrote all that stuff, him and Ed Ferrara. Why wouldn't they be trying to do the same edgy stuff at TNA? I don't understand that. I mean, everybody was, you know, saying, okay, we want the Attitude Era back. We want to have this adult content, edgy content in wrestling. I don't understand why TNA didn't jump on that bandwagon when they could and when they should have.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Yeah.
And I just speak – to me, it just speaks to just how boring this industry is. I mean, we've said it before. I mean, what is Raw about Raw?
Right.
I mean, they should rename the show Stale.
Right. Or Bland.
There's nothing Raw about it. Yeah. I mean, we had Bound for Glory. It was Bound for Disaster.
Yep.
Well, I mean, Ring of Honor, I think, is doing a good job, but nobody's talking about Ring of Honor because most of the country don't see Ring of Honor.
Right.
Which is sad. I mean, maybe that speaks to Sinclair and them owning it. Maybe Sinclair is not a big enough group to really promote Ring of Honor. I agree with Daniels. I talked to him the other day, Christopher Daniels, and I said, what does ROH need to do? And it's just like, you know, maybe one of the ideas he came up with was maybe on all the Sinclair channels say, hey, you know, Saturday nights at 8 o'clock, all our networks are going to show, our TV shows, our TV stations are going to show Ring of Honor at a set time. And if you know Ring of Honor's on at 8 o'clock or Ring of Honor's at 7 o'clock every Saturday, maybe people will tune in. But the problem is there's a lot of parts of the country, as we've talked about before here, Frank, like you in the West Coast, there's not many Sinclair stations out there. So unfortunately, I mean, they're all over the map. I mean, where I watch Ring of Honor in my area, it's on at 1 a.m. on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
And I'm not staying up to 1 a.m. to watch it. So I tape it. I watch it Sunday morning while I'm working out. And I will say that it's the only thing I'm really watching right now. I'm really not digging Raw. I'm not watching SmackDown. I'm not watching Impact. I look forward to the weekend where I can watch ROH because, as Daniels would say, as he said on this podcast, on this interview, that if fans see Ring of Honor, they will watch it. If you're a wrestling fan, you will appreciate Ring of Honor. They don't start with 20-minute promos. They have in-ring action. The talking is kept to a minimum. You will see minorities get pushed. I mean, Jay Lethal is the TV champion. He wrestles Caprice Coleman, ACH, etc. And if people see Ring of Honor, they will watch it. Unfortunately, people don't see it, and they don't watch it. So we're left with really commenting on Raw and TNA, and there's nothing Raw about WWE, and TNA's on its deathbed. So, I mean, we come up here and do this podcast. I mean, it's like, as I said to Frank a lot of times, you know, we're making a chicken salad out of chicken crap because essentially there's nothing going on. And, you know, we bring up topics that are topical, and that's why we love for listeners out there to suggest topics, you know, on our Gerwick Report Twitter page, on the discussion group on Facebook. You can email us. We have an email address set up as well. And, you know, you tell us what you want us to hear us talk about because, quite frankly, as a whole, this industry blows. I don't see anything changing anytime soon. WWE's not going to change its tone. It's not going to change its product. TNA is probably going to be gone shortly. Global Force Wrestling is going to start with, you know, New Japan, which is great. It's probably going to be a great show, but I think what New Japan's last pay-per-view was 5 hours long. I don't know how that's going to translate into American environment. The time schedule, I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into how, you know, Global Force Wrestling will be presented here in this country. And who knows, maybe we'll get a chance to talk to Jeff Jarrett, and he can answer that directly. But as a whole, you know, the wrestling business is way down right now, and unfortunately, I just don't see it getting hot. I mean, he says that we're going to this next boom period, Frank, and I hope he's right, but I just don't really see it right now.
Yeah, I don't see the boom period either. I don't agree with the boom period. I mean, a lot of that was based off of the WWE Network, and we all see how that's bombing right now. And it's bombing because here's the thing about it, and it's not really hard to do. The reason why the network is in the shape it's in is because you don't add content that people want to see. Hey, dust off the damn videos, dust off some Coliseum videos, dust off some AWA, dust off World Class, dust off ECW, stop dubbing the music, put on something that people want to watch, and then you'll probably see a boom, okay? But right now, when we have the product being garnered towards kids, the children out there that don't have any money, that's not going to spend money on the product, that's your problem. And it's like WWE is all about we're going to support these different charities and we're doing this and that. I mean, come on, man, really? You are a wrestling company, a sports entertainment company that's trying to buy a soul or something. You know what I'm saying? It's like you've done all this bad stuff over the years and you put out all this trashy product like Triple H, you know, with the Katie Vick angle and all that stuff. You've done all that stuff and now you're trying to buy public sympathy and you're trying to buy public sentiment. They want to support you, and we, you know, we're doing this for GLAAD, and we're going to go out here and we're going to support, you know, all these different causes. Well, let me tell you something about that, Steve. You know, they want to sit up there and talk about they want to, you know, be in business with GLAAD. Well, if that was the case and they support homosexuals, why is it that Chris Canyon was fired and the guy was so depressed about it he killed himself? So I see WWE's BS a mile away. Okay, and the only reason why, you know, Darren Young has a job is because it's supposedly now it's the end thing.
It's PC.
It's PC. There you go.
I mean, years ago in the 80s and the 70s, you know, you had to keep homosexuality a secret.
Right.
I mean, people didn't get work in Hollywood because they know people know they were a homosexual. And now it's in vogue. It's cool to be homosexual. And I mean, that's what they push now. I mean, it's pushed down your throat, the homosexuality agenda. Like, you're a bigot. You're a homophobe. And it gets tiring. And let me go back to a little bit with China. Because I've seen comments on GirlWig.net and our Facebook group saying that she's now, because of her comments, she's blown any opportunity to her to ever come back to the whip, as you would say. And she's probably blown her chances of getting into the Whip's Hall of Fame. You know, Frank, do I really think she cares about those two entities right now? Do I really think she wants to come back to the Whip? I don't think so. And do I think she cares about some stupid Hall of Fame that doesn't have Randy Savage or the Bulldog or Owen Hart in it? I don't really think so, Frank.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I saw the comments that people. You know, that's the thing about the crazy thing about the wrestling business and wrestling fans in general. You got a lot of crazy people out there, Steve, that's just like, they just flap their gums, and they run their mouth, and they're tearing her down on her own YouTube channel. They're just crapping all over China. And it's just like, you weren't there. Okay, obviously, Triple H and Stephanie, they put up this charade of a love story of how they met. But they forget about, hey, you know what? I cheated on Joni with Stephanie because I saw the future with Stephanie because I know that I'm really not worth anything. I know that my body is going to be broken down in a few years from all the steroids I've taken. So I need to make a move. Oh, and I made that move now because now I got 3 or 4 kids with her, and I'm in that corporate position. So, hey, I'm the man now. That's just the bottom line. So China's saying in her comments the other day, they say, oh, she's buried herself. She's been buried. Do you honestly think that they will ever really let her come back in that company? Triple H makes no mention whatsoever that he ever had a relationship with a woman. It's like it never happened. It's the WWE's revisionist history of what they won't tell you. And all these new people that's coming up, all the new kids coming up, they just know that Triple H and Stephanie are married. They don't know the backstory like I do, like Steve does, like a lot of you listeners out there. They don't know the backstory. And that's the thing with, you know, educating the new audience. They can do that. They can change things. They can say, you know, WCW didn't do this and they didn't do that. Because they can change the story. They have the videos to do that. And same thing with China. China, you know, China's been buried. China will never probably see the light of day in that company. I saw a comment where somebody said, well, Triple H brought back the New Age Outlaws, and they did a shoot interview about him, and they said some stuff. Why wouldn't they bring back China? Here's the difference, dummy. Because Triple H wasn't sleeping, as far as I know, with the Outlaws. He was sleeping with China. That's why. So he was sleeping with China. He cheated on China. China found out about it. As soon as that happened, her and the WWF couldn't reach a deal for a new contract. So they parted ways. And as soon as that happened, her life went to hell, Steve. It went right to hell. You know, I honestly feel bad for her. Honestly, though, I see she's in Japan right now. She's, you know, teaching kids or whatever. That's cool. I don't necessarily agree with the porn thing, but I'm not going to hit a ride on somebody how they make their money.
Well, here's the thing about China that a lot of people forget. When they put her into the male competition, once he won the IC championship, her career was over. She could not go back to wrestling women because she can beat men. She would destroy the women's division, and you're not going to continuously have her beat the male competition. So to me, once they made her the IC champion, that was it for her career. They're going to go nowhere with her. And they didn't. After that, she was a nothing. And, you know, they talk about, you know, DX getting in the Hall of Fame. If they put DX in the Hall of Fame, which they probably will at some point, it's going to be Trips, it's going to be HBK, it's going to be the Outlaws. It's not going to be Torrey. It's not going to be probably Rick Rude, unfortunately, because, I mean, Rick Rude should get in by himself, let alone being part of DX. And it's not going to be China. It's going to be those four, which is sad because I think each brought something to the table with DX. But when DX goes in someday, Frank, it's going to be HBK, Big Nose, and the Outlaws.
And X-Pac.
And X-Pac, yeah. Those are the main guys that are going to get in. You're not going to, as I said, you're not going to have those other characters. And, you know, you can argue about Torrey. You can maybe argue about Root. But to me, China was an essential part of that group.
China was a part of that group from the beginning. When you talk about
right.
When you talk about NWO, what do you talk about? You talk about Hulk Hogan. You talk about Kevin Nash. You talk about Scott Hall. And when I talk about NWO, I talk about Hall, Nash, Hogan, and DiBiase. That's who I talk about with the NWO. When you talk about DX, what do you talk about? You talk about Shawn Michaels. You talk about Triple H. You talk about Ravishing Rikki. You talk about China. That was the original D-Generation X. So for her not to be included when it happens, who knows what will happen, you know, 2 years or a year from now. We don't know yet. But all I know is that her comments the other day, people are saying she buried herself. With her comments, she's been buried. Do you actually think that Stephanie McMahon, do you actually think that Stephanie McMahon would feel comfortable and safe with Joni Lauer in the building? Do you really think so? No, I don't think so.
I mean, when I think of DX, I mean, talk about Attitude Era. I mean, China comes to mind. I mean, she was what, doing the tank? You know, when they're invading WCW, all the penis jokes she was there for.
Yep.
I mean, that was the stick that was getting them over, was making all these references to the male genitalia. She was out there for that stuff.
Yep.
I mean, she interfered. She low-blowed people. She was an essential part of DX. So for her not to be part of the DX when DX goes in the Hall of Fame is sad. And as you said, Frank, yeah, she's buried herself a long time ago. But I don't know. It's not her fault to a larger degree. I mean, she had a relationship with Trips. Trips dumped her, went to Stephanie. Good for Trips, bad for China. Now, I think after that, as you kind of alluded to, I mean, there was never going to be China returning to the company. There never was going to be China getting in the Hall of Fame. They're never going to bring her back. So, you know, the person that's really screwed China is Triple H.
Sure, pretty much. Absolutely.
Yep.
Because because Triple H is not going to allow somebody to come in and wreck his happy home and wreck what he has going. That's not going to happen. And your dad's sure not going to go in there. You're not going to go out there on the Hall of Fame and tell a speech that's going to embarrass Stephanie McMahon and embarrass Triple H and embarrass the company. That's not going to happen. So just like with, you know, superstar Billy Graham, we're going to go ahead and get and shut this down before it even gets started. So unfortunately, you know, I believe we'll never, ever see China in the WWE Hall of Fame. That's a sad thing because China was a big part of that attitude there. She was there through a lot of that stuff. I mean, she was there from when she came out the first time when she was just a bodyguard for Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And then that morphed into D-Generation X. And then she was wrestling the men. And then you remember she joined the corporation. And then she went on to be the IC champion, having matches with Chris Jericho. It's sad to exclude her. And they want to try to erase her history. And when they talk about her, they didn't talk about her as far as she was a bodyguard. That was it.
And you were mentioning before about the boom period, and a lot of that could have been attributed to the WWE Network. Frank, I know you've been talking about on this podcast before is you get these surveys.
Yep.
You get surveys through the mail. I got a survey the other day. It was the first survey I've gotten from WWE in a long time, and it was like, WWF needs your help. That was a subject line in the email. I was like, you think? So I said, okay. It says take 10 minutes out of your day. Do the survey. And, Frank, I'm spending 20, 25 minutes filling out this survey.
Oh, I know.
They want to know your watching habits, rate shows, what's missing, why aren't you with the network currently, when you might come back, your household income, if you're the only person in the house watching the network, if your kids watch the network, your enthusiasm level, pre-network WWE content, etc. And I, you know, Frank, I did the survey. I got halfway into it. I was like, I might as well finish it now. And I just hope it means something. Because when I see a lot of frustration out there by wrestling fans because they don't have the network. I mean, I talked to Christopher Daniels. He loves, as Frankie Kazarian does, loves the 80s wrestling, the tag team wrestling, the Shotgun Saturday Nights, the WWF Superstar, some of the shows we've talked about here previously, AWA, etc. They're not there on that network currently. And in fact, I brought it up. I brought it up to Daniels offline, and I said, "Do you have the network?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Yeah, a lot of people are complaining because a lot of the 80s shows are not there." And he's like, "You're kidding." Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. I wish I would have got that on tape because I was going to ask him about the network, but I asked him offline, and he's like, "No, I don't have the network." And then when I told him, all those 80s shows are not there. Primetime Wrestling, Fuji Vice, and Bobby Heenan Show. He's like, "You're kidding. They're not there?" Yeah, I mean, to the average guy, wrestling fan, how can those core shows not be there? Well, you know, Frank, I did the survey. I know you've done surveys in the past. I don't know if it means anything, but I wasted the 20 minutes of the day to help out the whip, and hopefully the whip does something with it besides tell me that it has a 90% approval rating.
Well, you know, it's funny, Steve, that you were saying that, and at 10:01 a.m. My time, I actually got a damn email from the WWE Network talking about my subscription has expired.
Yeah, me too.
Come back to WWE. So that's kind of funny that you started mentioning the whip, and the whip sends us an email trying to get us to come back to the network. I think that's just funny, and I think that they're listening to us in Sanford. That's why I think it's going on here.
Yeah, they've tapped into our line, and they're listening to this podcast. Yeah, as I'm talking here, I have an email that says, "Alert, your subscription has expired. Come right back for Hell in the Cell." Well, Frank, I'm not coming back for Hell in the Cell, and I know we received an email or a Facebook group a note that once our Hell in the Cell predictions, and Frank, are you ready for my predictions?
Go ahead.
Okay, here they are. There you go. There's my predictions for Sunday.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you this. I guess we can go in since you brought it, it was a perfect segue into it because we're going to go into a listener questions right now here. And this question actually comes from Travis. Travis out there discovered us through the Russo interview, so we appreciate that. He wants to know, actually, Steve, if I could be serious for a minute, he wants to know our actual predictions for Sunday's pay-per-view.
Well, I just gave my predictions.
I'm
not trying to be cocky, arrogant, but
you're not?
Essentially, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about Cena Orton. I don't care about Rollins and Ambrose.
Yeah.
I don't care about the Divas. I just don't care.
Right.
Period. But Frank, by all means, you know, give your 2 cents on it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't even know the card for the show. And that's just the truth, to be honest. I don't even know what the hell is going on. I know the top two matches. And that's pretty much all that matters is the top two matches.
Right.
So I'm going to just give my opinion on the top two matches. We have the match between Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. It's the Battle of the Shield that has culminated into a Hell in a Cell match here. And I got to believe that Dean Ambrose has to get the win here. Seth Rollins has gotten the win over Ambrose how many times now? I mean, it's finally going to happen here. And you know, the problem with this feud, Steve, is that they had a segment on Raw this past Monday night in which Dean Ambrose proceeds to chop up a mannequin or something like that. And the segment just went to hell. And Seth Rollins comes out with those two has-beens, Joey Mercury Matthews and Jamie Noble. And I guess they're the Stooges 2014. So they come out there, they're having a discussion, and all of a sudden, Mick Foley's music comes out there. And I felt bad seeing Mick Foley, too, Steve, because Foley's, you know, limping around now. And it's sad to see. But he saved the segment. He really saved it, and he really brought up the importance of Hell in a Cell and what Hell in a Cell did to his career, what Hell in a Cell did to him. He talked about what happened to him pre-Cell, and how his life is after Cell. So it was a very, very, you know, I think it was a pretty cool moment to see that. And the problem is going to be this Sunday night at that show is the cage match, we all know Hell in a Cell is going to be very tamed Hell in a Cell match. I guarantee you there will be no color in this match. And that's what kills the whole effect of the show. That's what kills the whole thing, is that there is no blood in the cage match. You know, you got to have, this is supposed to be a vicious fight. This is supposed to be a rivalry that's so heated that it's one of those combustible elements that it can only be consumed in this cell. You got to make it violent. You got to make it nasty. You got to make it dirty. And WWE is not willing to do that. I mean, the moment that somebody gets busted open the hard way, you guarantee they're going to stop that match. And how are you going to stop a Hell in a Cell match because of blood? Does that make any sense?
Because they're PG. They can't show it.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard of. It's like they're
maybe they can get that old, where you fade out the footage.
Oh, you know something? Here's the deal. Why don't they just do what they do on some of the network releases or on the damn DVDs? Just filter it black and white. That's what they do now.
Maybe they'll do that live. Who knows?
ignorant stuff like that. And as far as Randy Orton goes with John Cena, I guess this is supposed to be the end all to be all between John Cena and Randy Orton. This is going to be the culmination of their feud. This is going to be it. Randy Orton, supposedly, predicted months ago, he's about to turn babyface now. And the possibility of Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar is intriguing. It's something that we haven't seen before. So I'm kind of intrigued by that possibility. And I could very well see Randy Orton probably winning Sunday night and challenging Brock Lesnar maybe at Survivor Series for the championship. Survivor Series is pretty much now a throwaway pay-per-view. It used to be one of the biggest shows. It used to be with the top, one of the top fours, and it's a piece of crap now. And that's the perfect place for Randy Orton to get the rematch to get a match against Brock Lesnar. And I predict Randy Orton to beat John Cena at Hell in a Cell.
And to recap, here are my predictions.
Okay. too much.
And you know what, Frank? While we're venting, because I think we've had a great vent session here on this podcast.
Right.
Another thing that's irritating me, and I don't know why people think these are funny. There's these clips on Facebook with Randy Orton RKOing different people when they're legitimately getting hurt. People are falling off bikes. People are roller skating, roller blades, and people are falling to the ground, hitting the pavement hard way. And you have a clip where Randy Orton gives an RKO. Now I'm seeing Triple H's pedigree in people, and I've seen where Shawn Michaels is super kicking people, and I think I've even seen Austin give somebody a Stone Cold Stunner. I don't get what's funny about these videos, because in these videos, people are legitimately getting hurt. I mean, there was a guy, and it was stupid. The guy jumps up on top of a vending machine, thinks he's going to flip off, and he lands hard on the pavement, and you have RKO. Randy Orton come in and pretend he's hitting him. I mean, they take the footage and, stick him in there like he's actually giving him an RKO. I don't know about you, Frank, but I find these videos very tasteless.
I can't comment because I haven't seen it.
Okay. I mean, just go on to social media. They're all out there, and I just don't understand the point of it. I mean, the subgroup is what, PG is killing WWE, which I guess is a valid point to a certain degree. But seeing somebody get hurt and then to imply that they're getting hurt through a wrestling maneuver, it to me is ridiculous. I don't understand the point of it. And like I said, I don't find it funny. And they're all over the place now. And I'm sure you'll see them very soon, Frank, if you've already seen it. But I just find them very, very tasteless.
Yeah, I'm actually watching one right now as we speak on YouTube. It's the RKO Vines. And, yeah, I'm checking them out. He's RKO and people on a soccer field and it just looks stupid. It's just
right.
Retarded. I mean, it's not funny, but it's not, I'm not going to go all been out of shape about it. It's just stupid. It's like, it's crazy.
So that's
ridiculous.
That's something that's really bothering me when I'm on the social media. I mean, Facebook, you go on Facebook and you see all these fake stories.
Yeah.
Legitimately, like zombie Ebola victims in Africa rising from the dead. Ebola zombies. And I'm like, am I supposed to think this is real? I'm going to click on the story and read it?
Yeah.
I don't care. What's the point of A, writing that story, and B, posting it? And then people saying, well, I'm tired of these fake stories. Well, just ignore them. Don't give them the light of day. But I'm doing it here because this is the part of the reason I go on Facebook sometimes, and I want to pull my hair out. I see these stupid videos, and I'm seeing all these fake stories out there. And, you know, then when a legitimate story is out there, you're like, is this for real? Because you don't know, because there's so much crap on Facebook. You have to kind of sift through and, I guess, make your own judgment if something's true or not.
Yeah. I'm looking at this video here. This is really stupid. Some of these people are just, some of these people deserve to get hurt. Because they're just doing stupid, stuff. Like right now, this one girl just jumped over a brick and hit her face on the other side. Just,
yep.
What an idiot. So
okay, yeah, they're idiots for doing that, but by putting Randy Orton in the video, it doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it more funny. It doesn't make it more entertaining.
Nah, the only video that I could see that was funny, that was similar to this, is they had Jim Ross commentary with some stuff that had happened. And that was funny. But yeah, this is lame. This is stupid.
No.
This is like, so, nobody has nothing better to do with their time.
Yeah, really. I mean, take some of our clips and put them on YouTube if you're bored.
Exactly.
You know? Go on social media and plug the Gerwerk Report if you're bored. It's just like, when I see people too on Facebook say, I'm bored.
Yeah.
And while I admit the wrestling industry is boring, I mean, I don't have a free minute to sit down and watch TV anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, with what's going on in life, and, you got to keep up with what's going on in the media, with Ebola, with wars and propaganda out there, you're bored?
Yeah.
I don't get it. I mean, you have video on demand. Netflix, you could just watch something.
Right.
You're bored? You can watch anything whenever you want to watch it. It's wherever you want to watch it now. I don't know. Crazy.
We had another two more questions from Travis. He wants to know our thoughts on TNA, the Dead Brand, taking the Dead Brand title off of Bobby Lashley.
Does it matter at this point?
Yeah, I didn't agree. My whole view, and I said this weeks ago on podcast, I think that Bobby Lashley was their Brock Lesnar. It's a little bit darker, but he was their Brock Lesnar. He was their, he was that guy. He was the only legitimate guy they had in the company. So why they took the belt off him, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I think that if TNA is in a dark period right now, which I believe they are, then why not keep the belt on Bobby Lashley until you have a new TV deal or whatever it is you're trying to do. So I think that was a mistake. Especially if next week or whatever, Bobby Roode beats him, okay, well, is Bobby Roode going to be the last TNA champion?
I think we've discussed this before, is who should be the TNA champion. And honestly, to quote The Rock, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
None of these guys are going to draw anything because the company's dead.
Right.
I mean, if Cena came in tomorrow, is he going to mean much for TNA? I doubt it. Nobody's watching TNA anyway, so good for Bobby Lashley to win the championship. I mean, Bobby Roode certainly is one of their top stars, but I think the bottom line, Frank, is it just doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all. I wish you would ask this. They would have had Bobby Lashley as champion maybe a year or two ago. If he had been with the company, then it would be a different story. But right now, when you're at the tail end of a company and there's so many so much uncertainty right now as to what's going to happen, it's not even worth the discussion. It's just, who cares? I mean, nobody cares.
Who cares?
That's just the bottom line. Nobody cares at this point. And I don't really think even the casual fan out there even knows that Bobby Lashley was a TNA champion. And that's the sad thing about it, because they don't know anything about the Dead Brand. They don't even know the Dead Brand exists.
True.
And the final question from Travis was the best Nitro ending ever, in our opinion.
Wow. And I'll start out by saying, Frank, a lot of Nitros ended poorly.
Right.
You remember how they would build up like the main event and the main event would suck?
Yeah.
I mean, the undercard, the first couple hours of the show was a lot better than the last hour.
Yeah.
That's a hard question to answer. Wow.
Yeah, I got to think about that one for a minute.
As I say, you should ask Frank, because Frank is probably as close to a Nitro expert as there is out there.
Yeah. I'm going to go with this one. I have two that I can think of that I think were big deals. One of my favorite Nitro endings happened It was the night where the Macho Man got spray painted yellow by the NWO, by Hogan.
Right.
And that's the night the Big Show Giant joined NWO, and it was just complete chaos. NWO just attacked everybody. So that was a good that was a good night for anything. That was probably one of the best ones I've seen. The other one I have to think about was the night that Sting joined the Wolfpack. That was a pretty good ending. That was something that had been built up properly by WCW, and whose side is Sting on? So that was pretty good right there. I enjoyed that ending. And if I had to pick a third one right quick, I would have to say, I mean, even though it was a big mistake business-wise, it was a hell of a moment. It's when Goldberg beat Hogan for the belt.
I was just going to say that. If I had to pick one, I would say Goldberg win the championship because that got a pop. As you said, it was a wrong business decision. They should have put that on pay-per-view. That's one of the biggest criticisms of WCW is they produced television, but they didn't produce pay-per-view buys. That would have got a lot of buys. Would have been a big, large gate for that particular pay-per-view, but they didn't go that way. But from a television perspective, it was great to see Goldberg beat Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah. So I would agree. If I had to pick one of those, I would say Goldberg, just because of the momentum Goldberg had at that time. And here's Hulk finally going to put somebody over. And, you know, it really should have meant more than what it did, in all honesty. But from a one-night perspective, that was something special. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. We have another listener question. See, this one comes from Dakari Adamson. Dakari Adamson says that he enjoyed the podcast with Sonny Ono and the Fallen Angel Christopher Daniels. He tells us to keep up the good work. And he wants to know, perhaps in the near future, can Lance Storm be a candidate for the Gurick.net Hall of Fame if he wasn't already?
Okay, the first answer is he has not been officially nominated for the Hall of Fame. It's an interesting name, former tag team champion in ECW, went to WCW, and then, of course, was in the WWE. Good wrestler, good look, never a great promo talker, promo ability. Solid in-the-ring technician. I just don't know if I would vote for him for the Hall of Fame.
Lance Storm is one of those guys, solid in-ring technical performer, but like I said, he never made it really in WWE, and that's where it matters, if you can make it in WWE. So he never did that. So I don't know necessarily if he would be a Hall of Famer or not. I don't know. It would be up to the readers and listeners of the podcast and the readers of Gurick.net to decide that.
And honestly, Frank, I think he got exposed when he went to WCW.
Sure.
The one thing about Paul Heyman, the brilliant mind that he was, is that he emphasized strength and hid your weaknesses. And when they went to WCW and WWE, they didn't do that with Lance Storm. And I think he was super strong in ECW. He had the great tag team run with Just Incredible, Impact Players with Dawn Marie. Tremendous. And he went to WCW. I think he lost a lot of momentum because, to a certain degree, he was overexposed. And a lot of his weaknesses were exposed on television. So I have no problem with him being a candidate. I'm just saying, among us here, I probably wouldn't vote for him. But if fans want to see him on the ballot, got no problem with that. So it's an interesting name, if nonetheless.
Yeah. And we also have our final question. See, it comes from Efren from the Facebook group, Gurick Report Podcast. Facebook group, which you can join, 1,500 members and growing. Check it out right there on Gurick.net. I think their link is up there for the Facebook group. But he wants to know, Steve, it's a very controversial topic, really, but not, maybe not. He wants to know if Chris Sabin's departure from TNA Wrestling had anything to do with the fact that Velvet Sky and Bully Ray started a relationship.
Okay, you asked me this offline, and I checked with a TNA source, and I was told no, had nothing to do with that situation. It was probably like a similar situation with the Bad Influence. Essentially, they didn't have anything for him. Daniels was saying on the interview here, he just didn't feel like anybody was really in their corner from a creative standpoint, and that's why they let him go. And I think the same thing with Saban. They just felt like, you know, he'd been there a long time. He had his run. He got his TNA championship. But from what I was told, Frank, the two situations were not related. I know Velvet Sky is with Bully Ray now, But I don't believe he departed TNA for that, and I think it was just TNA deciding they no longer wanted Chris Sabin.
Yeah, it could be the case. I mean, you know, they've gotten rid of so many of the TNA original talent that was there back in the day, so that could very well be the case. I just thought that Billy Ray was married. So, hey, go figure.
Well, that doesn't stop anybody anymore.
Yeah, especially in this business.
Yeah, who was it the other day? Was it Teddy Long on our podcast saying, you know, as far as – no, maybe it was Ron Simmons. I can't remember. It was one of those previous interviews we did saying – or no, you know, it might have been Vince Russo. And
Russo
think about
said,
it,
yeah, as Russo said, yeah. The only guy that he knew that was loyal to his family and loyal to his wife was the late, great King of Hearts, Owen Hart.
Yeah, so when I hear about extra relationships – it's like night and day. It happens all the time.
Yeah, not that there's anything wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just, you know, shit happens, right?
Yeah, I guess. And actually, you know what, Frank? We actually did hear from Ravon this week.
Oh, we did? Okay.
Yeah. We have, of course, he enjoys our interviews. Looking forward to future interviews. And I will say, I don't want to reveal names, but coming up in the future on this podcast, we got some really big names lined up, so I don't know exactly when it's going to be. Logistics are being worked out, but big things coming to GirlWick.net and the GirlWick Report podcast.
Exactly.
So stay tuned for that.
Exactly. Yep. The only thing we can say about that is trust me.
Good, great names, great personalities, very interesting. So I'm sure we'll have a lot of material for TV tracks for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But his question here, he's got two questions. One going back to Lex Luger, who, of course, is the candidate this month for the GirlWick.net Hall of Fame, and he's been solid at 74%. Looks like he's going to probably get in.
Cool.
Is if Lex Luger would have been given the WWF Championship, do you think he would have been a good WWE champion, and how long do you think he would have kept the strap?
Ooh, that's a very, very good question. That's the first I've ever heard of that one. Man, that's sad, right? That's the first time that I've ever heard a question about Luger actually winning the belt, because how they screwed that up.
Yeah, I mean, he had all that momentum going into his championship match, and, yeah, I think he would have been a good champion, and I don't know how long he would have held it, but he had all that momentum at that time, and, I mean, really, WWE dropped the ball with him.
Yeah, they really did. What I would have done with Luger is I would have put the strap on Luger at that SummerSlam. SummerSlam, I think, was SummerSlam 93 or something like that. Put the belt on Luger. Have Luger ride with the championship, if they could have, all the way into WrestleMania. And then he would have lost it to Yokozuna. And then Yoko would have lost it to Bret Hart later that night. So that would have been.
Yep. And then the second question is, what was the main reason for Ahmed Johnson leaving the Whip in 1998? Was that related to him hurting everybody, Frank?
I think it was. You know, it's kind of funny because we were talking about Ahmed offline, matter of fact. And, you know, Ahmed Johnson is always is another polarizing character in the business, because he is a guy that has so much momentum, and he was so hot at one point, not to make it to being the first, you know, black WWF champion. And what happened to his push and why he was derailed? Simply because he hurt everybody. He would do that Pearl River plunge, and people were getting hurt, and Ahmed started letting his body go, and he was injury prone. So Vince couldn't do anything with the guy. I mean, before there was Goldberg, there was Ahmed Johnson. But Ahmed had him. I mean, Ahmed had the look. He had the cool theme song, and I still listen to it his day. You know, he had it. I don't know. It's just, unfortunately for him, it didn't work out. And, you know, a lot of his downfall happened, honestly, when Hall of Famer and a person we just recently interviewed, Ron Simmons. When Ron Simmons first came on the scene in WWE, you know, his first encounter was with Ahmed Johnson, and he legitimately injured his kidneys, legitimately put him out of wrestling for a little while. And that was the beginning of the end for Ahmed. And then they turned him heel when he turned on The Undertaker and joined Venetian Domination, and you thought they were going to do something with that, and then he got hurt. And that was the end of his push. And after that, they went in a whole other direction, and that was it. So, I mean, if anybody out there can find Ahmed Johnson, love to interview him on a podcast and get his, you know, side of the story.
Yeah, I don't think he does a lot of interviews, and I think he'd be a very interesting character to pick his brain about that era. And then, of course, he went to WCW, and he was about 300 pounds when he was there.
He was a good 400 pounds. Looked like to me.
Yeah, oh my gosh, he looked terrible. And yeah, he was one of those guys I thought was going to be a huge star in the business.
Yeah.
And I guess part of it is his own doing. You know, when you injure people, you know, work on your craft, try to get past that. And I don't think he ever really worked on his craft and unfortunately let himself go and he turned into a whale.
Yeah, so. And then on top of that, too, you know, there's a lot of videos on YouTube that are funny about Ahmed Johnson. It's called Fun with Ahmed. And it's pretty much, they're just ribbing him about his lack of promo ability. You couldn't understand a damn thing he was saying when he was talking. So it's pretty funny. Anyway.
That was a big liability. Promo ability was very lacking. But at that time, Frank, they could have given him a manager.
They had who they had. They had Clarence Mason there. You know, they had Jim Cornette. They had Jim Cornette. They had a lot of people. You know, Nation of Domination. You know, they had Ron Simmons there, but Ron Simmons was an active wrestler. I mean, but you know, I don't know. As far as going back real quick too about how what kind of champion Lex Luger would have been, I think Luger would have been a pretty good WWE champion. Matter of fact, I think that Luger was supposed to be the heir apparent to Hulk Hogan, right?
Right.
So
yep.
I think he could have been a drawing WWE champion. I think he could have been if he was given the ball. But for some reason, they didn't want to give him the ball.
Very true.
I mean, if you ask Eric Bischoff why they didn't want to give Luger the ball, he'll tell you straight up because Luger sucked. I think Luger got by on the body, and Luger got by on having that charisma and that cocky attitude. That's what got him by. But other than that, I mean, I thought as an in-ring performer, I thought Luger was terrible.
He really was.
Yeah.
Total package. Not in the ring, he was not the total package.
No. But he had that million-dollar body with, 4% body fat or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so he had that going for him.
He was ripped back in the day.
Oh, he was, yeah.
Yep. I also want to mention here, too, Frank, a name has surfaced. We always like to do the Hall of Fame, WWE Hall of Fame possibility, at a time when David Hasselhoff, remember this guy, David Hasselhoff?
Yeah, Baywatch.
Baywatch, Knight Rider when I was growing up.
Yep.
Kit the car that would talk. Yeah, this guy did a YouTube clip where he was encouraging WWE to put the British Bulldog in the WWE Hall of Fame. I know we've talked about the WWE Hall of Fame a lot. And the most recent name that's come up in the rumor mill is Tugboat, the Shockmaster in WCW. And I think his real name is, Fred Ottoman.
Right.
He's still out there. He does independent shows on occasion, makes appearances at conventions. And his name has kind of surfaced in rumors. What does Frank D. say about the possibility of Tugboat being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame?
I think that if the Tugboat goes into the WWE Hall of Fame, Tugboat needs to be inducted alongside with his, late partner, John Tenta, as the Natural Disasters. That's what I think. I think on his own, he can't do it. But as tag team partners with John Tenta, he might have a chance. And I think Natural Disasters in the early 90s, that was a hell of a tag team for two big men, so they can move. I mean, people just don't give John Tenta the credit that he deserves. That guy, for a big guy, he could do some stuff. I think together they should go in the Hall of Fame, not separately. Because if you think about it separately, we got to bring up the Shockmaster, and we don't want to do that. So, you know what I'm saying? So let's go ahead and put them in there together, and everything is copacetic. It's just too sweet.
Well, I threw this name out at Frank before the podcast, and I said, Tugboat Hall of Fame, and you said yes, former tag team champion. And then got to my brain, it's like, okay, how about some other names? And just for the sake of debating, I said, how about Brutus Beefcake? He was, of course, part of the Dream Team with Greg the Hammer Valentine. What about him for the Hall of Fame? And I also thought Marty Jannetty. In fact, I believe he had the Intercontinental Championship as well. And I believe you said, no on both of those. Those are interesting names to consider for the WWE Hall of Fame.
Well, let's dissect it for a second here. Let's talk about Ed DeLeslie first. Let's talk about names, right? Okay, how many names did this guy have? Let's see. Brutus Beefcake.
and then you went to WCW, your brother Brudai, and then you turned heel and you were the Butcher, and then you were the Man with No Name, and then you were the Zodiac, and then you were the God Awful Booty Man. That, yeah, that was going to get over. And then you were the Disciple. Hell, that's not Hall of Fame to me. You know, that's just, I mean, honestly, yeah, he's the former tag team champion. But you know what? When he had that parasailing accident back in the day, that's what saw his end to me. Although I enjoyed the barbershop segments on, you know, Superstars or Wrestling Challenge.
Which we can't see on the network.
Which we can't see. You're right about that. You see it on YouTube, though. So you can't see it on the network.
Okay. There you go.
But I just don't see Hall of Famer. And, you know, the thing about Marty Jannetty is that Jannetty was good, was a solid performer when he was tag team with Shawn Michaels. He was okay when he was the IC champion, but I don't see him as a Hall of Famer because his career longevity in the WWE didn't go that far. And it's just like when he was teaming up with Al Snow back in the day when they were the New Rockers. Remember when Al Snow was Leith Cassidy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That right there, he just didn't care anymore. I mean, he came back, you know, years ago. And he did those that one match with Kurt Angle on SmackDown. Phenomenal match. Thought he was going to get a contract or something. It didn't happen. So I'd have to say no to Jannetty in the Hall of Fame. But once again, if we go back to the fact that we got Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame, absolutely put him in. Hey man, Brutus Beefcake. And have Brutus yep. come out with the shears.
Yeah, I have to agree based on what you said there about Beefcake. The guy had a higher position in WCW because he was friends with Hulk Hogan.
He was always, I mean, and that's the bottom line. He will always be Hogan's funky. I mean,
yep.
Limited promo ability, wasn't very good in the ring, had some of the skimpiest wrestling attires I ever saw. I just don't see it. I just don't see Hall of Famer. But if we have Coco in there, sure. Put him in.
You lower the bar considerably every time you bring up Coco Beware.
That yeah, and it's not a knock on Coco, but Coco, listen, Coco knew the whole time that he was in the whip, he sucked. Okay, I mean, come on.
I don't know. His tag team with Owen Hart was pretty good.
It was okay, but come
better
on,
than
man.
Nothing.
It was better than nothing, as Iron Sheik would say. Yeah.
Cheeky baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Probably Marty Jannetty, I'd probably say no as well. That could be something that people want to, you know, vent on. By all means, definitely do it. And the last topic I wanted to discuss today, Frank, is a change with the WWE announcers.
Right.
Justin Roberts was essentially let go. They didn't renew his contract. And now we see Lillian Garcia is on Raw, and Eden, who is married to, I guess, Stardust now, is now the ring announcer on SmackDown. I was really surprised they let Justin Roberts go. I thought he was really good, and I have no beef with Lillian, but I'm not sure Eden is ready to be on the big stage. But I guess at least they didn't put Byron Saxton on there.
Yeah, I can't stand Byron Saxton. I loathe that guy. He just go back to Florida or something. Anyways, yeah, I don't understand that. Justin Roberts was probably the most professional announcer they had, and really knew how to hype the crowd. I was there at some of the shows when he was there, and the guy is a class act. So I don't know what the reason was behind them not re-signing him. I don't think Eden is ready for network television. I don't think she's ready for the big stage. I think Lillian Garcia, yeah, she can handle that. But, I mean, I would prefer they brought back Tony Schiavone and put him on SmackDown.
Yeah, where was his name?
Right.
Not mentioned. I mean, heck, you could bring back the Fink at some point as well. Jeez.
Yeah.
But, you know, I got no beef with Lillian. In fact, gosh, you know, it's hard to believe she's like 50 years old.
What?
She's like legitimately like 50 years old, and she looks tremendous.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, every time I see a picture of her, I mean, she does on her social media, she'll pose with fans, and fans will you know, post their pictures ringside with her. Actually, the wiki says 48. There's some dispute about her age, but I believe she is getting close to 50 years old, the legitimate age of Lillian Garcia. But amazing that she looks tremendous.
Wow.
And I know if you go on YouTube too, Frank, she's kind of in the Botchamania Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
For falling down the ramp, going down the steps. She's fallen on her face a few times, and yeah, somebody will probably add the RKO to that those clips as well. But I got no problem with Lillian Garcia. I just think she looks tremendous for her age. She's, you know, I was glad to see her come back. I think she is something special out there.
Yeah, I did not know that woman was 50, damn near 50 years old.
Yeah, it's she is, wow, great genetics.
Yeah.
She looks tremendous for her age. I mean, I would, you know, when I first heard the age, I was surprised.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed she's that old, but wow. She's a gem. She can sing, she can ring announce, and she looks great. So
I totally agree.
No problem there. I don't know about Eden, though, on SmackDown. Seems like they're pushing her very quickly. Oh, she was on NXT, and she was gone for a while. She came back, married the American Dream's son, if you will, and lo and behold, she's on SmackDown now.
Yeah.
Go figure. So.
I guess she's getting that push because who she's married to, right? Because we all know the push he's getting.
Well, I will say Eden looks tremendous as well.
Oh, I totally agree.
She's beautiful. Yeah. As far as a ring announcer, I don't know. Well, I guess over the course of time, we'll tell. I just was surprised they let Justin Roberts go. I didn't see the need to let him go. I can't believe it would be budgetary at this point, although, I don't know. I don't look at the books at WWE Network. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And I'm sure, I mean, you pay Eden a lot less than you pay Justin Roberts, who's been there for over a decade now. But I was surprised they let him go at this point.
Yeah, and maybe we can get Justin Roberts up here and we can find out why.
Possibly, although I guess he's writing a book now. So.
Damn, already?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear about his career in WCW before he got to WWE.
Perhaps that was related. Maybe WWE didn't want him to write a book, and he's like, I'm writing this book. And they said, okay, we'll let you go then.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
And before anybody says anything out there, I know damn well he wasn't in WCW.
No, they were spending all that money on Buffer all those years, right? So,
right. They could have got Roberts. How about that?
Huh. Go figure.
Yeah. I want to send a shout-out to a couple people out there that are listening right now.
Okay.
First of all, I want to send a shout-out to my homegirl out there, Margaret and the kids, Destiny, Jason, and Angel. Frank D. says, what's up? And I want to send also a special shout-out there to our friend, the Wrestling Jackal, man, Daniel, out there, who's listening to the podcast. He just had a car accident the other night, so I want to send him a special get well soon. Keep your head up, man. Everything will be cool. I've been in your position before. Rest and get better, and don't worry about any graphics right now. Just work on you, like I told you. And I want to send a shout-out to Efren in the Facebook group, you know, my homeboy from the NYC. And send a shout-out to Travis for saying what's up. And that's pretty much all the shout-outs I got this week. Back to you.
Yeah, I probably should have mentioned this up front. We do have Efren contributing a new podcast here on the Gerwick.net podcasting family. He does a podcast called the Atomic Podcast, and we posted interviews he did with Roxy Rossi out there, an independent diva out in the Tennessee area, and as well as Earl Cotter, who said that the Cody Deaner gimmick was basically a ripoff of his character. So if you want to listen to those podcasts, those are available at Gerwick.net. Check out the audio section. We also, of course, have the Gerwick Report page. All our links, if you want to check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, you can check those out there. And also, we have all the back podcasts that we've done, Frank. We've done episodes going back to January. We're coming up on a year on our podcast here. We've got over 50 podcasts. And the nice thing that I did in creating that page is it's not only the number of the podcast, it also has the topics we covered as well. So you can go back and if you're looking for a particular podcast that we discuss certain things like the Hall of Fame or we discussed the NWO or we did one on history of WrestleMania, You can find that at girlwake.net by looking at the discussion or the topics that we discussed as well, which is kind of interesting to look back at all the different topics we've covered here on the podcast. So you can pick out a podcast that either you've heard, want to hear it again, or if maybe there's a lot of those podcasts up there that you have not checked out. A lot of ways for the listeners out there to listen. As I said, you can communicate with us on our Facebook page, Girl Work Report Podcast on Facebook. And as well, I should also mention the old school way, the old hotline way, Frank. We're at 206-279-1499. So as always, we definitely appreciate your support. You listening to the podcast, you spreading the word about us on Twitter and Facebook, emailing us, give us suggestions for the podcast and future episodes. And as always, we always appreciate the love.
Exactly. And also, if you come on the Facebook page and join our group, you never know who you're going to have a debate with. I went the other night with Glenn Gilberti. You never know who's going to stop by the Gerrick Report podcast.
Exactly. So definitely, we always appreciate your support. And we'll talk to you on the next edition of the Gerrick Report podcast.